On this special episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, recorded live during the Ohio State ASC Association's 2019 annual conference in Columbus, Ohio, we interview state ASC leaders about activities of the association and issues related to Ohio ASCs.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys.
Welcome to episode 67 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for September 19th, 2019. We're recording from Columbus, Ohio, with post-production in our studios in Spenceport, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the leading experts in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry, and the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including The Survey Guide for ASCs. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics. So we had a great time at the Hilton Polaris Hotel in Columbus, Ohio. It was a beautiful hotel.
It was very nice. And I think this is the third time I've been back to that specific hotel with the conference. So again, this was the annual meeting of the Ohio State Association. They do it in Columbus, which is central to most of the people in Ohio. It is, I think, really one of the best conferences in the nation for a state association. Mm-hmm. And of course, you and I go to quite a number of them. So I think we can say that pretty fairly.
Yep. And they're always great to us, too. They give us a lot of people to interview.
They really
do a good job.
And we had this wonderful, it's actually the same place that we had last year. It's a little closet. It literally is a closet, but it was a large closet. Mm-hmm. Very quiet, which made it easy to record in. So again, thank you to the State Association for giving us that opportunity. Thank you to all the people that we interviewed. We're going to go through, the conference, the types of things that we picked up from it, and we'll have a couple interviews. And over the next month or so, we're going to have various individuals that we interviewed talk about some of the topics they spoke on in more detail. So,
yep. So it was a two-day conference with a pre-conference, so kind of 2.5 days.
Right.
The first day of the pre-conference was dedicated to infection prevention.
And this is something they do actually every year to keep the infection preventionists up to date. It's interesting, Sue, one of our clients, not one of yours, but one of the clients out in Ohio that we work with, the doctor is actually the infection preventionist, and he usually goes to this conference every year. Unfortunately, missed it this year, but he always raves about how good it is, how much he learns from it. And this year, they did it in three parts. One was just a kind of a comprehensive infection prevention workshop talking about the duties of an infection preventionist. I guess they did have a focus on MRSA, and they also had a primer for the CAPE exam, which, of course, is very near and dear to my heart, the CAPE being the Certified Ambulatory Surgery Center Infection Preventionist credential that is sponsored by the Board of Ambulatory Surgery Certification, which, of course, I'm a board member. So, you know, on behalf of BASC, I'd like to thank them for, helping to spread the more information about the CAPE credential and obviously providing some continuing education for it. So, and then the conference started on Wednesday. So day one of the conference started with a number of sessions. We're not going to go through everything that was talked about, but we will focus on a few of them that we saw and that we did interviews for, and of course those that I spoke at.
We didn't get to see a lot of things because we were doing a lot of interviewing.
That's happening a lot. That's the same excuse we had for not doing it in California.
But so we do enjoy it, though. We actually spoke to Rena Corte, who gave one of the talks, so we didn't sit in on her session, but we got some good information from her. And she had a session on day one, Simple Steps for Enhancing Productivity, where she talked about encouraging people, your staff, to do well, how to deal with people that maybe are not as productive as they could be,
right,
and just a whole range of different issues.
Developing a culture in the organization that helps to encourage people to be their best. And it was a great session. We'll include her in a future episode. And then there was a session on the State of the Union for ambulatory surgery centers in Ohio. It was a two-parter. Randy gave an update on state issues, which he will actually discuss in an interview in the second part of this. And then Karen Newberry, who actually lives in Columbus, Ohio, had to stand in for Bill Prentice, who was not able to make it at the last minute, to talk about national perspective. And we actually were able to interview Bill during the California Association. So what I'm going to do is we're going to include Bill's interview in our section here, since it's totally relevant for Ohio also. He didn't speak anything specific about Ohio or California. And I thought that would be a good thing to include in it. And then I did ask Kara, she did a session after that about the 2020 payment rule, which Bill did talk about, but she went into quite a bit of depth in that. I didn't hear her, but we had to do an interview at the time, but I've heard Kara, of course, speak many, many times about this topic. And I did try to grab her for an interview, but unfortunately she had some personal things that she had to do and she had to run out. We will catch her. She cannot escape me, though, forever. So
we'll be persistent. And then, of course, John, you talked about advanced case costing, and you can maybe give an overview of that.
Yeah, certainly. Well, first of all, if you want to know a lot more about advanced case costing, we did an episode 47 where we discussed the topic. One of the reasons we did that discussion is that there had been some kind of misinformation out there from other speakers about case costing, and we really felt that it was important to talk about such an important topic. So my session was based actually kind of upon that episode 47, where we talked about why you really want to get into case costing. And probably one of the most important things that I emphasize when doing case costing is the importance of not worrying too much about overhead costs. Because if you're going to be making a decision based upon case costing, most likely it's going to be based upon the direct cost and the direct revenue that's associated with it. So I'd encourage our listeners to go back to episode 47. And we will, of course, recycle these topics periodically. We'll talk about it. Revisit, right, these topics. And maybe I'll do a special session on it since, you know, even since we recorded that, it was in the spring. I have a lot more information or a lot more ideas as I prepared for the speech. But the whole concept of this was, even though we called it advanced case costing, is I try to give the audience some ideas as to how to make it easier to do this and still come up with very complex conclusions there.
Yeah. And then we also spoke to Rena Corte about disruptive physician behavior. That was another one of the talks that she gave.
Right.
We'll be playing that in a future episode. And I just wanted to point out, too, because she was very clear about this, that there's a lot of people that can be disruptive in your center.
Right.
She was focusing specifically on physicians, not for any particular reason. That happened to be the talk she was giving.
Exactly.
But a lot of good information.
Yeah, okay. That was a great session. Of course, it's one of those very controversial topics, as she talked about. But again, the reason that they brought it up is because that's the particular topic. And, you know, periodically we talk about, you know, other behaviors in the organization. Yep. And then I went to the, they had an event at Top Golf there in Columbus after first day sessions. You kind of went
The rest
out
of us it. All went to bed.
Actually, everybody else in the company went to bed.
We've gotten in quite late because we drove in from the city.
Sue and I actually went. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we drove in from New York City.
It was a
We left New York City at like 3 in the afternoon, and
it was
so we
a
got
a 9-hour
in.
Trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I went to bed. You went and did golf.
And so I had a lot of fun. I mean, what's good about those social events is it gives you an opportunity, a much more relaxed atmosphere, to, you know, talk to other individuals in the industry about various things and get to know them a little bit better. And let's face it, you know, a little bit of alcohol does tend to loosen people up a little bit. So I'll tell you what was fun, though. I've done some surveys in Ohio, and a couple of the people that I had done surveys a number of years ago came up to me, and they wanted to take selfies with me. So I just...
Well, you must have been nice on the survey.
I must have been a good survey. They were. I mean, of course, Ohio is a great state, and certainly I do remember that year. I think I did two surveys in Ohio, and both of them were great. Mm-hmm. So, but that really is good for the ego. So having my picture taken with other people, I felt like a real star. So after I recovered from that event and woke everybody else in the company up, we had day two of the event, and it started. The first session I want to talk about is Lee Eaves. Now, so you and I listened to Lee talk in Nashville at the ASCA conference, ASCA 2019.
Yes.
And he talks about active shooter events. And he is a great speaker. He has a lot of great information. Mm-hmm. We were not able to get him to interview. He did say that he might be willing to do a remote recording. So yeah. We'll see if we can work that out. It'll be difficult, I think.
Yeah, but if anybody ever gets a chance to hear him, I thought he just gave a lot of really good information. It was very engaging. And he talked a lot about how people are likely to probably know a perpetrator if somebody comes in. It's not likely to be somebody off the street that right. just wanders into your center. So things to watch for, also ways to handle it if something does happen.
Right. And we talked about that, as you said, we talked about that during the ASCA 2019 conference, that was probably the biggest takeaway and the biggest surprise. And what was interesting about Lee is his wife is an administrator in a surgery center. Mm-hmm. So he really does know the business. He really does understand, the types of issues that we have to deal with. So mm-hmm. again, thank you, Lee, for that session. I'm sorry that we couldn't have done an interview.
And the other talk that you gave, John, was on succession planning.
So yes.
There's a lot to talk about with that.
It was. And it's one of those that's kind of near and dear to my heart. One of the challenges that we have in our business right now is that there's a lot of turnover in many organizations, especially smaller organizations, organizations that really, struggle with keeping people. Sometimes it's because they're so small that they're not full-time. Sometimes all they can really attract are younger people that have visions of moving on to bigger places after they get some training. So succession planning is a big issue right now. So I gave a session, and I'll probably have a future podcast that focuses a little bit more on this. But what I was really focusing on is three different approaches. One is, what happens if you're planning for the future and if you want to have an heir apparent. In other words, you identify somebody in your organization that can rise to an administrator or nurse manager level. And basically what you're doing is at that point, you're focusing all of your energies on one person. So, the positives of doing that is it gives you the ability to give a very high level of training. You can manage the expectations. Unfortunately, the negatives there tend to be, if you do all of this and then they decide to leave, you end up with a double departure. And of course, it does tend to sometimes cause problems with coworkers that might be jealous about the attention that one individual has been given. So,
And one thing, and I know when we talked to Tori Kalett, she was talking about the succession planning. She's been through that kind of right. thing. And just sharing your duties with several people in the organization for multiple reasons. For one thing, because then people will know what you do in case they have to help out with taking over. Also, if people understand what you do, you're just a little more appreciated. People realize right. what is going into your job. So I think the more kind of that open door policy is
absolutely
is useful.
Absolutely. And it's challenging. I think even in those stable organizations, you have to be prepared, not always just for people that you know are going to leave you, but for sudden changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody, quits, hopefully they'll give you a couple weeks notice mm-hmm. or
somebody could
leave.
Get sick.
Well, and we had the one center in Buffalo, unfortunately, that the nurse administrator had a very serious accident. Actually, it was a workers' comp claim because she mm-hmm. was injured on the job, and she was out for months. Uh-huh. In that position. And of course, that caused strain in the organization. It was a very small organization. They didn't have a lot of people that could step up. And fortunately, they did very well. But you need to be prepared for that type of a situation. So the second planning strategy we talked about was external targets. In other words, trying to recruit people from, an external group of individuals that might be available to you. The positives of doing this is it can bring added value from external experience. You're bringing somebody that has another perspective, which can be enlightening and good for an organization. It gives you a larger potential pool of individuals. You might have more control over the pay, and you're not dependent upon that current employee loyalty, which is not always guaranteed. But the negatives are you have limited control over the variables there. You might be dealing with unknown entities. They have limited knowledge of the center, which is kind of the flip side of that added value from external experience. And that pool may disappear. Maybe you can't afford them, or somebody else snaps them up before you're able to bring them on board. Mm-hmm. And then the third planning strategy is employee growth. In other words, finding a way to grow all of the employees in your organization so that they might become, potential leaders in the future. And the positives there is that there's no favoritism shown to any of the individuals. It does cause a little bit of healthy competition, if it is healthy competition. It gives you multiple options. The negatives, though, are, of course, you don't have a clear plan. And as we talked about, it might end up being unhealthy competition if you don't do it properly. And it can be very costly to train everybody to a very high level. So those are the three planning strategies. We'll have a future episode, and we'll do that interview with Tori during that episode. So we'll try to fit that in before the end of the year.
So we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back with the interviews. our first interview is with Randy Loeffler, the Executive Director of the Ohio State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers. We talk about the benefits of membership and activities of the association. John and I are at the Ohio State Association of ASCs annual conference, and we're here with Randy Loeffler, the Executive Director of the Ohio Association of ASCs. Welcome.
You guys welcome. Thank you for being here.
So 2 weeks ago, we were out in California with one of your dear friends, Beth LaBoyer, and we had a chance to we didn't have quite as nice a setup for her, because even though we had a studio there, we had to break it down before we interviewed her. So we caught her in a hallway. So here, at least you're in the studio.
A lot of background noise.
Yeah, it was a lot of background noise. So I know you spent a lot of time talking to her. All of you executive directors, have a very close relationship.
Yeah, we have a great network of folks that do what we do, as well as then help the people that are volunteer organizations as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and of course, having two of the really major association meetings within 2 weeks of it.
For some reason, September seems to be the hot time. Yeah, not all of them are, but it's getting more and more so. September seems to be a very popular month to do it. Yeah. So,
well, and I'll just say, we're really at the tail end here. You got one session going on as we're doing this interview. This has been a fantastic conference. I've done two sessions here.
Oh,
great audience participation, great audience, feedback, from them, and all the feedback that I've heard about the conference itself has been great. So tell us a little bit about the conference.
Sure. Well, we have a 2-day conference, 2-day full session conference. It's one of our largest, last year. We have about 250 attendees, as well as a good 44 exhibitors in addition to that. And so we have two solid days of the conference. And then we also have one day in advance, a pre-conference. It used to be a half day on infection prevention. It's grown to almost an entire day. And again, we had about a little over 100 people from different centers attend that as well. And it's really a big focus for our state regulatory agency, the Department of Health. They want to make certain that they have annual training.
Right.
And they also want to make certain that some component of that addresses things that are happening within the state of Ohio based on their surveys, as well as hot button issues, because we've had some healthcare systems that, not ASCs, but hospitals that have had problems with Legionella. Okay. And so those are the things that they continue to want to stress for the center. So we try to give them as much resources as possible, things that they can take home to do in-service trainings, and just as many resources for the infection preventionists that we can.
That's great.
I think what I really enjoyed too at this conference is you had a really wide variety of topics. For example, we just listened to Lee Eves talk about active shooter.
Correct.
I did a session on succession planning, which is just not a topic that we usually talk about here. We just interviewed Rena, who did a session on a disruptive physician, which of course can be a very controversial topic. So you're not afraid to jump into everything.
No, and we actually had some physicians here, so I was curious what they would think about it. But
they were not in the session.
Maybe purposely.
Yeah, right. But,
we tried to cover the gamut, not only on the clinical side, but we try to have a lot of focus on a business or a coding side, as well as things that are more higher level administrative, and like your session on succession planning. ASCs in Ohio have been around for quite a while, and there's a lot of administrators that are getting ready to move on. And it's a good opportunity for us to share with them a wide wealth of information and resources. So
how are you going to top this next year, and where?
I have no clue. We will start, though. We have a committee of the membership. We'll start here. I'll take a few days off, and then we'll start probably at the beginning of next month, just in terms of putting together a call for presentations. And then we'll work that through the early spring. We get a lot from my counterparts in other states. I see what they're doing in terms of their educational programming, and try to pull in some things that maybe we haven't done.
Right.
But we try to share as much. My counterparts and I try to share as much in terms of speakers and topics that really are relevant to the people that are coming. So,
And you're going to be back here in Columbus next year.
We will, yes. We generally speaking are here in Columbus every year, not always at the same hotel or same conference facility, but Columbus is very central. You pretty much can get here from any part of the state within a couple of hours, as opposed to going to other parts where it might take 5 or 6 hours. Fortunately, mm-hmm. by and large, we're not like many larger states where people have to fly to get here, at least participants, that is. But yeah, so we'll be back at the same conference center and back at the same place next year.
That's sounds good. Place. So let's talk about what's going on in the State Association. Let's start with what are the benefits of membership? Obviously, this annual conference is a big part of it.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we have a wealth of benefits. Conference, obviously, you know, discounts on all of that. We have a wealth of resources on our website, provide them a lot of information on infection prevention, a lot of information in terms of regulatory data, being able to link very easily to the regulations for the state of Ohio as well as CMS. The other thing that we provide, we have a benchmarking system that is a part of membership, and that is free as a part of the membership. Right. And it allows our centers to be able to report their quality data as well as some financial data.
Right.
And then on a quarterly basis, compare themselves not only to other centers in the state, but also regionally within right. the state. So it's been around. It's probably one of the first state-focused benchmarking systems. And there's a number of other states that have actually used or are using our right. system now. So it is then gives them the ability to do reports, right. you know, for board meetings, for staff trainings to show here's where we're faltering versus other or here's where we're excelling
right.
versus others. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge benefit.
And we use that. We have a couple clients, of course, in Ohio, and yeah. we use mm-hmm. that data every single quarter.
Yeah, it's very important data. It's, for my perspective, what is produced at the end of it is probably some of the best, not only in terms of looks, but in terms of just qualitative, being able to judge yourself versus the center down the street or the mm-hmm. center on the other side of the county, as well as then a center that might be in another part of the state. Right. So as opposed to trying to compare yourself from Ohio to a center in North Carolina,
right, or whatever, right.
which, you know, could be a completely different comparison. So yeah, it's great data. And then obviously the other thing that we do, like almost every other state association does, is our advocacy efforts
right.
and working with our members to determine what their issues are, working with the legislature. When issues come up at the legislature, then working back with our members to see how this is going to impact them so that we can advocate on their behalf.
So that brings us to the next topic. What's going on from a legislative and administrative standpoint in the state of Ohio your listeners here
sure.
Need to hear about?
There's been quite a bit over the past year.
It hasn't been boring.
No, it has not been, especially this past summer. There was a change in the law that defines what an ASC is in the state of Ohio. It used to be that it had a multitude of different criteria, that if you met one of them, then that would qualify you or require you to be licensed as an ASC. That includes anesthesia, that includes 24-hour stay as a part of that, but that still remains. But there are a multitude of various data points that if you met that, then yes, indeed, you had to be ASC licensed. That is all. Most of that has been taken away with the exception of the 24-hour stay. And what has been added is, in its place, is the location mm-hmm. of the center. So if a outpatient surgical center is not in the actual hospital
right.
with an under their roof, then it needs to be licensed as an ambulatory surgery center. So for example, an ASC that or a hospital outpatient department that might be on the same campus as a hospital, but they're considering it an HOPD, would now need to be licensed as an ASC.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they can't still bill
as an HOPD,
but it means that they have to go through the licensure process with our Department of Health.
Which, of course, means for them that they're going to have to follow the ASC state rules and the
Correct.
HOPD federal rules. So.
They would have to do that. They would also have the inspection criteria that ASCs do, which is generally speaking, it's getting to be almost a yearly
right.
Inspection that the HOPD does not have right now,
right.
and also meet the criteria for an ASC and the actual requirements within the ASC licensure.
So to that end, obviously the licensure regulations, the ongoing licensure requirements, that is very different than many other states. I mean, I see it a lot in Pennsylvania. you know, which is very close to you, obviously.
Sure.
But, you know, states like New York, actually many of our places in New York haven't had a licensure survey in, you know, 10 years. So that's quite a burden, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting. When I first actually came to the association as executive director, many centers had not seen the Department of Health since the day that they were opening or right before the day that they were opening. And that has changed quite a bit. A few years ago, it changed that they would be out every 2 to 3 years, maybe 4 years, but they're really stepping up their inspection rates. And then oftentimes they'll combine it if there's a Medicare survey that's happened or they need to do a Medicare survey. They'll combine those two. But for the most part, I have heard from a multitude of centers that they just had a survey a year ago and now they're back.
Yeah.
Surveying again. So
how do organizations, short of hiring a consulting firm in order to help them prepare, so how do they prepare for that? How can, especially organizations have limited resources, what are their options?
Well, we have some resources ourselves for them in terms of checklists and those kinds of functions. Coming to our conference is a great way to prepare for those. And we actually see a lot of folks not necessarily every year come to the conference, but as they know that their licensure or their accreditation inspections coming up, they'll come to just make certain that they're focused on what needs to be done. I think sometimes – you're right. I think hiring somebody to come in and do a mock survey can give them some sense. It's not a terribly expensive thing, but it gives them a sense as to what possibly they could be facing. So that's one of the things that I always encourage. And we have a number of resources like yourself. We try to say, you know, if you're concerned about something, because they really are very focused on a variety of topics. Big thing is, as I mentioned, in addition to the infection prevention, another big thing is life safety code.
Right.
And that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes that requires some specialized assistance because not a lot of clinical managers or clinicians in particular know, I mean, who crawls around in the ceiling of their facility to see if there's firewalls and stuff. So
or even what a firewall is.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things I found very surprising here is I walk around this conference and you said it, you know, 250 people here, you know, for a state. Now you have a large number of ASCs in the state. But what I found interesting is the number of centers that send more than two sometimes attendees. You know, I ran into a place that I surveyed a number of years ago. They've got five people here from the organization. That's incredible.
Well, and I think that they see – first of all, I like to think that they see the value in what they're doing. I mean, but I think because of the wide variety of the wide array of different topics, you know, if you bring your business person – your business manager, your head clinician, maybe that is not necessarily your infection prevention person, the administrator overall. And then some of them, I believe, use this as an opportunity to not only network with other ASCs, but also as a team building experience for the senior management within their center. So, you know, at the conference, it's not all about the education specifically in terms of all the learning that goes into it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. But we also have a lot of downtime where people can get to know each other, whether they're in the same center or whether they're talking to people in other centers. And we try to have a little fun as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a way for them to be able to show some appreciation for their management staff, as well as then have them get something out of it.
To that end, so if you didn't come to the conference because of all the wonderful sessions or the wonderful food that you serve here.
or the fun that we
I was just going to say that's the other part of it is you had a great event last night. We were over at
Top Golf.
Golf, right. Yeah. I was closing – well, you were kicking me out the door at the end. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was one of the largest evening events that we've had. And we try to do that every year, but that was one of the largest ones we've ever had. So it was fun.
It was nice too because it's large enough that we weren't tripping over each other, but small enough that we had an opportunity to kind of meet everybody there.
Correct.
So great job on that.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, thank you.
As always, Randy, thanks for inviting us out here and
thanks for
spending some time with us.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we interviewed Tori Kalit, my dear friend, and the president of the Ohio Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers. And she talked about the work that she does with the Ohio Association and the benefits of being a member of it and what she's learned during her tenure with the organization.
John and I are here with Tori Killett, the Senior Director of Clinical Services with AmSearch and the Chair of the Ohio State Association.
Welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
You were here last year talking about what's going on in the State Association. This is your last year as chair, right?
Yes.
Until they come back to you.
Well, possibly.
And you've been on the board. I mean, you and I are good friends. We've worked together for a number of years. Your former employer was one of our clients, and you have risen through the ranks to become the chair of the State Association. So what a great honor, right?
Absolutely. I worked my way through. I was a treasurer for a couple of years and then vice chair for 2 years, and then you do the chair for 2 years, and I get two more years on the board as the past chair. So
right.
It's...
Well, the great thing, we just finished interviewing, you know, Randy, and he really is a top-notch.
Absolutely.
So he tends to make your job hopefully easier, you know, kind of helps you. So tell us a little bit about your role as chair.
When you're the chair of the association, Randy, as John just said, he is absolutely amazing. He does 90% of the work for you. He does, you know, get in touch with you. And I do know when something new is coming out in the legislature, if there's any changes, something getting snuck into the budget.
Yeah.
Like he said, they always sneak everything into the budget, yeah. Which we find that out all the time. Randy will get in touch with all of the executive board, not just the chair.
Right.
And see what our stance might want to be for it. And he knows we're all working a full-time job as maybe an administrator or like me now in this clinical director role. And he takes care of it. He goes down to the state house and takes care of it. He's invited me to go with him. And that's a great learning experience when you go along and you meet these people and talk to them about the real life situations and everything.
So this is a great conference, and it's a great job that that Randy did in putting it together. And of course, you as a board who is responsible for making sure that it is successful. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. You know, Thank you. Of course, we attend an awful lot of these conferences, and this is definitely one of our favorite here.
We're pretty proud of our conference area.
As you should be. And we just talked about coming back here again to Columbus next year. So that's exciting. So I guess a big question for you is, you've risen through the ranks. You started coming to these things, you know, back before you knew everything that you know today about
absolutely.
It. How's the State Association helped you to become a better administrator now in your new role as, a regional clinical director?
Basically, it all goes back to what I've kind of already said. I had our surgery center join the State Association within a few months of us opening. Mm-hmm. And that first year, you know, when you're just a member, you get an email.
Yeah.
And this email will say, oh, this is coming up or this is happening. But the next year, when there was an opportunity to the board opening, I thought, you know, I'm going to become a board member.
Yeah.
See what that's like. Being a board member really gives you a lot more of the inside scoop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really important to be a member of the association, but the more active you can get, there's numerous committees. I learned the most from the reimbursement committee the second year I joined this because being a nurse, I didn't know as much about the billing and the reimbursement side of it. And it was just amazing what I learned over on that reimbursement committee. It helped me a lot with approving certain procedures getting done, you know, because I didn't have any clue that, hey, they're not going to pay for half of that.
Right.
You know, so I really learned a lot. So the committees are very important and they will really help you in any role at the surgery center. And then when you get on the executive board, you do hear about things a little faster than the rest of the other members. But other than that, I would really sell joining as a member of the Ohio Association, because Randy is excellent about getting everything out to you, the information. And then this conference, plus he usually does webinars. Yeah. There's an awesome benchmarking system so that you can benchmark amongst your peers, not just national, but these are against Ohio centers.
Right. And that the really salary survey,
good.
Too, that comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, actually, Randy didn't even mention the survey.
And we do a reimbursement survey.
Right.
And when you're contracting with the insurers, that is great to know where you fall, because the answer you always get as soon as you call them and say, we need to renegotiate, they say, well, you're at the top of the list. Yeah. Well, that's not always true when you look at what the average person's getting, you know, the average center, and you know, that's all done by third party, so it stays all confidential as to who's mm-hmm. getting what.
Right, right. So that's big takeaway, what we're trying to really get across here is the importance of state membership, mm-hmm. the importance of getting involved, and perhaps making sure that everybody understands you're not alone as an administrator, right. as an organization, that the state association is here to help you and all the leaders, yourself included. You know, you obviously help a lot of the individuals out when they give you a call. You're always there for them.
Absolutely. I don't know how many times I made phone calls, especially when I first started doing this, but the last couple of years when I was an administrator, I had a lot of times Randy would call me and say, hey, there's a new center starting to do total joints.
Yeah.
Can I give him your name? Absolutely. Give mm-hmm. him my name. And yeah. I talked to numerous places in Ohio that was, wanting to add those things on. So it's great for networking and it's great to get to know. And you see the same people every year and it's like, mm-hmm. hey, you're still here, and it's kind of cool to run into them and see what they're doing. And
I'm probably going to regret this because I've already referred you to some people that are looking in our own organization to start in Total Joints. So we probably shouldn't say that, but definitely those of you that are looking into starting up Total Joint programs, you're not alone and it is difficult and there's a lot mm-hmm. of challenges, and touching base with somebody that's gone through it and visiting some of those sites where they're
Absolutely.
Doing it is very helpful.
Yeah. And usually people are pretty proud of the fact that they've done it.
Yeah.
So they're excited to tell you how they did it. And they're excited for you to come see their center and how it worked. In my new role, I've learned that the states have a lot more influence on starting new procedures.
Right.
So sometimes you even got to start at your state level. And the Ohio Association, or any association, if you would be part of it, would help you at least know what your state rules are on that.
Thank you so much, Tori. As always, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Take it easy.
And our next interview is with Brian James, the regional director of Intellair. We talked to him about the arrangement with the Ohio State Association for group purchasing. John and I are here with Brian James, regional director with Intellair. Welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Brian, last time we talked, we were in New York together at the Roosevelt. And you're talking about the special program in New York, and now here we are in Ohio, and I'd like to have you talk a little bit about the same program that you have here in Ohio.
Yes. So thanks for having me, by the way. And certainly, as we continue to evolve as an organization, we've felt that the need to the associations is really our best conduit out to our membership. And the participation and engagement is really the driving force behind our marketing agreements that we do with our association organizations. So here in Ohio, we've had a relationship for probably about 4 years now. And really how our association agreements, what we call strategic marketing agreements, are in place to serve two purposes. So really our core competencies as an organization is to provide our members value through our programs and services. Uh-huh. And then the other benefit is the ability to share some of the revenue that we earn through that participation in our programs back to the association to support however they see fit, to support their meetings or initiatives that are important to the membership.
So let's actually take it back a step and let's talk a little bit about what a group purchasing organization is, a GPO, and specifically kind of talk a little bit about what are the real benefits of going with, like in Ohio, your relationship with the state association versus, like people can go out on their own. They don't
right.
necessarily have to go through the state association to the GPO. They can go directly there.
Correct.
But you've definitely created a program that gives a benefit both to the ASC as well as the state.
Right. So GPO, group purchasing organizations, we used to be Amerinet, now we're Intellair. We've been in business since the late 80s. So really GPOs have really kind of had to continue to evolve themselves. We're owned by Intermountain Healthcare, which is out of Salt Lake City. So we're provider-led, and GPO services has been kind of our core competency for years. We have about 100,000 members today, with some of those being surgery centers. There really wasn't as much value that we could drive to our members just through our GPO services. We continue to hear some of the challenges as healthcare continued to change. We had to kind of keep changing with the market. So GPO really just gets admin fees in for our contracts, and then that's really what has been our, kind of keeps the lights on. Now we've developed more solution base. So we really are calling ourselves a professional supply chain and healthcare solutions company. Can't fit that on a card.
Right.
But I think GPO has a certain kind of perception of what GPO does.
Right.
And we really want to kind of break out of that, even though we will go back to our core of people understand what a GPO is, what they do. And we really are kind of continuing to evolve so we can continue to drive value to our members. And then the benefit for them versus just signing up with us as a regular member is we have the ability to aggregate across a class of trades. So we're doing a lot of class of trade verticals versus just having a broad portfolio. So you want to have very customized solutions for ASC. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, we can kind of provide a specific formulary of contracts. And then we're also able to aggregate across the association so we can aggregate their volume to even drive better pricing for our members. Mm-hmm. And that's the true value that would come going through the association.
So one thing that still shocks me is that when I go to new clients of ours, sometimes I discover that they've never had a relationship with the GPO. They don't even know what a GPO is. And a lot of these are, you know, places that are new to the business. You know, maybe they ran a physician's office beforehand and then came into it. So talk a little bit about how easy it is to get into a GPO,
yes.
How much it costs, which is nothing.
Yes, nothing.
And the benefits. And one thing I did want to point out too, Brian, Intelair is a nonprofit.
Correct. So we, I guess being provider-led, so there are some other, I guess, competitors out there that basically have stockholders, you know, so they're, publicly traded companies.
Right. Or for-profit. Yeah.
And so being provider-led, certainly we're able to reinvest, I guess, our revenue streams back into developing more programs. And we have the leeway being provider-led. We don't necessarily have to answer, or I guess, to a kind of a publicly traded group.
Right. Yeah, you don't have that profit motive there.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to make money in order to be able to reinvest, but you don't have that profit motive where you have to take your profits and give it to shareholders.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So we feel like we want to be kind of a good steward of our business, you know, and I think being provider-led, Intermountain's kind of core competencies is around driving costs, improving outcomes, and being more efficient. And I think having that provider-led model allows us to have a blueprint that now we can scale and commercialize now to most any segment that we have members for.
So if you are a surgery center here in Ohio, what do they do in order to participate in the arrangement?
Yes. So we have another benefit through the association is we've streamlined the paperwork. So instead of filling out an individual participation agreement, it's very simple LOP or letter of participation for them to sign, one pager. Mm-hmm. And like you had said earlier, no cost to join Intelair. What we do ask is, I think the value that our members get from us is active engagement. So we don't have a product that we put on the shelf for you to go self-service. Mm-hmm. But I think it's those that heavily engage us, and really data is king. You know, if we don't get data, we really can't do much for you. We have to know what your specific spend is in order to bring you the most value. Mm-hmm. But no cost, very simple. I have two sales reps in the state of Ohio to help facilitate that. And it's a very easy sign-up process that you can have your account set up probably within a day.
So you and I were talking before the interview about my experience with GPOs. And one of the things that when I was an administrator for 17 years is that,
right.
You know, I would set up this arrangement with perhaps somebody like you, you know, at the higher level people. And then, of course, we would turn it over. I turned it over to the business office manager. You deal with the account rep. And then, you know, we discover like 2 years later that we had kind of fallen, or, you know, the participation had fallen because we're not actively managing it.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that active management, the importance of it.
It is. Again, data is kind of the driving force of what we need in order to do the analyzing of how we can benefit you. But it's an equal partnership that we need both sides to engage. And it has to be continuous communication, because a lot of times, you know, you do handoffs and then you assume things are getting done.
Right, right.
So we have built some specific resources. We have a implementation team in our Pittsburgh office that actually helps facilitate the paperwork. So we haven't necessarily relied just on the sales rep in the field, but we've built some support resources in the background that can be that driving force of making sure that things are moving. And there's a very systematic process that we take our customers through in order to kind of keep them engaged.
Right. And again, let's make it clear that this has to be actively involved, that you just don't set it up and then let it go.
Correct.
In order to really get the most benefit from the cost savings that you can get.
Well, and I think most people think when they join a GPO, it's like going to Sam's Club and all the pricing's turned on.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not, well, we wouldn't have as many resources as we have if it was that easy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And even when you have active engagement, you have to work all the way through with that vendor to ensure that they're getting your program price.
Right.
Because obviously with other competitors out there, it's a ongoing roll up your sleeves kind of process that we have to follow. And if we don't have dedicated resources, then that's when things kind of do fall off.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. You have a lot of experience with looking at people before the GPO gets involved and afterwards. Can you kind of give an idea as to what type of savings? Maybe let's just talk about general distributorship type stuff, not the specialized items.
Yeah, I would say, so really our core, I guess what we call distributor programs would be MedSurg, pharmacy, office supplies. Those are probably the three main categories. Mm-hmm. I think on average, I guess it really depends on if they have a GPO in place today, we may not see as great a savings. I guess the key is for any time that they're part of a GPO, it's not just sign it and forget about it.
Right.
Yeah. If you're not actively reviewing their data, because they may start buying things that they didn't buy before. Mm-hmm. So if you don't continue to kind of get data and cleanse it and kind of connect them to the right contracts. So I think it's really dependent upon how engaged maybe the previous GPO was involved. Mm-hmm. Of how they were continuously trying to connect them to the contracts. Yeah. I would say those that are not in a GPO, typically we're going to show probably 15 to 20% savings on average.
Right. So again, if you and our audience are not already participating in a GPO, and of course, if you're in the state of Ohio, taking that into consideration. And again, this is not something that's going to take you a lot of time to set up. It's a very quick phone call.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we're definitely here to help.
Thank you so much, Brian. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
And our last interview was with Bill Prentice, who is the president of the ASC Association. We were able to interview Bill during the California Association meeting, and we thought it might be good to include that interview here. He was unable to make the Ohio State Association, and Kara filled in for him. So this was a discussion about what's going on at the national level. Let's listen to Bill.
John and I are now here with Bill Prentice, the Chief Executive Officer for the ASC Association.
How are you doing, Bill? It's great to have you finally on the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here with you both. I'm sorry it's taken this long for us to get together in this setting, but I'm hoping it's worth the wait.
Absolutely. I was talking to Beth LaBoyer earlier today, and I said, it took us to go to California to talk to Bill. You've been at almost every single conference that we've been recording from. So, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, I'm hoping I don't disappoint.
So, we've done a couple episodes about the 2020 payment rule that came out in, it was almost August, I think, by the time it came out. So I thought we'd just follow up a little bit with you as to what the ASC Association's take on the rule was, what some of the big highlights were, what you would like to have seen in there, and how you've responded.
Sure. We were really pleasantly surprised with this rule, and I recognized there weren't a lot of moving pieces to it compared to some of the rules we've had in the past. But we were particularly happy to see that CMS continued the policy it instituted last year in terms of updating ASCs for inflation using the same inflation factor as the hospital outpatient departments. That change from the consumer price index for urban consumers, the inflation factor that they formerly used, to the hospital market basket has been very positive for ASCs. In fact, we've received the two highest inflationary increases over the one last year and two in the proposed rate of 2.7% for 2020 of my entire tenure at ASCA. So it was really positive.
Nice. And as we've pointed out to our listeners before, just because we got the 2.2% increase doesn't mean that everybody is going to get a 2.2% because of the
no, there's obviously a lot of different issues. There's a lot of regional variations in payments that take place. And that is particularly apparent when you look at another provision that was in the proposed rule that we were very pleased to see, which was moving the total knee arthroplasty procedure off of the HOPD list and now allowing it to be performed on the ASC list as proposed. Mm-hmm. And if the one concern we have that has probably been noted by others is when you look at the national average of what they're proposing as a payment for that in the ASC space, it's around $8,600, which again varies widely based on the wage indexes and other reasons that you've probably informed your listeners about before.
Especially since we got people in New York City at the very high end and people out in the rural.
So that variation can range from $12,000, which is approximately what the national average for the HOPD price is, down to around $6,000 in some rural areas.
Right.
So one of the things that we're really hoping is a lot of the ASC members out there that are doing total knee procedures will submit comments to CMS by the September 27th deadline and recommend what they think an appropriate price would be.
Okay.
Now, I have to be honest. The likelihood of CMS changing that price this year is very slim because they've really baked in those numbers already into the budget. However, they could use that data and hopefully increase it next year for the 2021 payment year. So it's really critical that as many ASCs as possible submit data to CMS about what they think a fair price would be.
And the ASC Association's provided some tools for them to be able to do that.
Absolutely. We provide some template letters that members can use to add in their own personal information to and submit that to CMS. It takes only a few minutes to do that. It's something that we're really encouraging ASCs to do.
Especially those centers that are doing these procedures or considering doing them.
Particularly those. And you know, exactly, because it's critically important. This is one of those situations where the more feedback CMS receives matters as much as what feedback they receive.
Right.
So we'll obviously be providing substantial feedback and comments on everything in the rule. But on things like this, where we really need to move the needle with CMS, it's important to get a lot of feedback.
Right.
Yeah, and you've seen results from people giving feedback and from things you've said to them, so it is going to matter.
Well, and last year, the whole impact of the vascular access surgery, too.
And that's the thing. Like, one of the things that we have been doing more and more over the years is trying to bring clinicians to CMS, to Baltimore, to talk about what they're doing safely on commercial patients in an effort to get those procedures put on our allowable list for Medicare beneficiaries.
Right.
And so it's something we're going to continue to do. So if there's anyone out there that is doing something commercially that currently isn't on the Medicare list and you know, would like to help us to educate the medical directors there at CMS about it, we would love to hear from you.
Great. Sorry. Any other surprises in the in this year's rule?
No surprises. I think we were still pleasantly surprised to see the addition of additional cardiac procedures.
Yes. Yeah.
That's obviously a growing area in the surgery center space. You know, it requires pretty substantial investment in a surgery center to be able to have the correct facility for those. But it's the type of work that ASCs were born to do.
Right.
And things that we can very safely perform and have been doing it on the non-Medicare population. And that's the type of thing that we need to see more of. But, you know, as interesting as it is and as excited as, you know, the ASC community gets about getting these new procedures added to our list, I think we can't lose sight of the fact that it's critical that we do more of the very common procedures on Medicare beneficiaries for which too many are still being performed in the hospital outpatient space.
It's shocking that we still see a lot of those common procedures there, absolutely.
Well, using colonoscopy, screening colonoscopy, one of the most common procedures performed in ASCs, the fact that we are not doing even 50% of the Medicare beneficiary procedures.
Yeah.
Is appalling.
That's a bit of a shocking statistic. I didn't know that.
It's when you think of the you know, the millions of dollars that is being wasted by paying a hospital outpatient department roughly twice the amount of the ASC to perform that very common procedure, when we know that there's only a very small patient base that is really at risk, where it needs to be performed in the hospital. We really need CMS and you know our lawmakers in Washington to really get a handle on that and try and find a way to migrate that care from the more expensive setting to the surgery center. And if we do that, we can save the Medicare program hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. We can save the Medicare beneficiaries a ton of money on copays. And that really needs to be a priority for us. So as fun as it is to get new procedures like total knee added to our list, we really have a lot of work to do to try and get these more common procedures, more of them migrated to the surgery center.
So Medicare quality reporting, you and I have actually talked about this a number of times over the last year, especially after the 2019 payment rule came out and, let's be honest, kind of gutted many of the Medicare quality reporting items. So this year they did not add back in 1 through 4. They've proposed to make it not through the billing system, which actually I think is a good idea. What are your thoughts on what happened with the Medicare quality reporting this year?
Yeah, I would say that the actions that CMS took last year to suspend those first four measures, which were wrong site, patient fall, patient burn, and hospital transfer was a combination of two factors. One, the great results that ASCs were providing in terms of their data submissions, showing how rarely any one of those four potentially adverse events occurred. So that the fact that so many ASCs were reporting so few bad outcomes led CMS to, you know,
and we don't need to report them.
Recognize that they don't need to do that. Then on top of that, there was also the fact that the Trump administration, as they've shown in so many other areas of government, are trying to reduce regulatory burden.
Right.
And I think they viewed that desire of trying to, you know, CMS trying to show that they were reducing regulatory burden with the great results that we've been showing led to where we were with those four measures. Now, that said, as you're probably aware, last year in our comment letter, and I think this year in our new comment, we're still going to tell CMS that we would prefer to continue to report on those four measures and actually not just report on Medicare outcomes, but to report on all patient outcomes. That we think that those four measures, regardless of how good we've been doing on them, are so elemental.
Right.
In terms of their patient safety value, that we should continue to report on them. So we'll be doing that.
And that's what's good about the proposed change here, where they would be reporting it through ASCQuality.org.
Well, exactly. And then, as you may know, also from this proposed rule, they've actually been recommended that HOPDs actually report on those four measures. Right. So again, that would allow for an apples-to-apples comparison across the ASC setting with the HOPD setting on those four very, I think, important measures. So it's something we're still advocating in support of.
So moving on, one of the issues that we come from New York, and one of the issues that came up a number of years ago is a surprise billing act that you know, changed some of the ways that we do business in New York. And now suddenly we hear about surprise billing at the national level. So the Trump administration has proposed some changes. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Again, this is another place where I think the President Trump himself, through some actions he's taken in terms of inviting in some patient groups over the past 6 months, has highlighted, you know, the importance of this issue, that there are too many patients out there that are being subjected to a surprise medical bill that they were not aware of and quite frankly, probably can't afford to pay because of the way our system operates. Now, this obviously most often occurs in the emergency setting where a patient presents himself or herself or a family member in an emergency room, thinking that that hospital from prior knowledge is in network with their insurance provider and that they will only be subject to whatever copays or deductibles they usually pay, but then finds out that there was a provider in that emergency room or somewhere ancillary to that that was not in network. And as a result is, you know, sending a bill to that patient that far exceeds what they expected. And I, you know, Congress has really spent a lot of time fighting over ways to try and address this issue. It's relatively bipartisan, which is a, you know, a unique thing for what's happening in Washington, D.C. today, where you have Republicans and Democrats both acknowledging the same problem and acknowledging that there's a couple of different potential solutions to it. And that's, of course, where the battle is the solution. And that's where I think you're seeing the provider community, the insurance community, at odds with each other and amongst themselves about the right solution. And essentially it comes down to two approaches to deal with the surprise bill. In both of them, the end result is to leave the patient out of the middle. So the patient's not going to have to pay that surprise bill in either instance, but the two approaches are vastly different. One of which is more in favor of what the insurance companies want, which is to rely on some median contracted rate in that market that the out-of-network provider would be, you know, forced to accept as full payment for his or her services. Versus what I think there, what I say is the provider solution, which is to go to a baseball style arbitration. For those of you who don't follow baseball closely, the idea behind there is the provider would present to an arbitrator her suggested reimbursement for that procedure and the insurance company would present theirs. And the arbitrator would be required to choose one of those two numbers. So they wouldn't be able to split the baby. They'd either have to accept one or the other. The idea behind that and how it's apparently worked in baseball to most people's satisfaction is it results in both sides presenting a reasonable number. Because they want to be the one the arbitrator picks. So the problem is that I think most of the legislation that has received bipartisan support right now is defaulting to the negotiated rate rather than arbitration. So there's a lot of money being spent now to try and convince Congress to go the other way.
Yeah.
You create that kind of choice for Congress, and unfortunately, the most common result is they kick the can down the road and nothing gets done.
So that brings up the next question is, what chance do we have of that happening during this?
I think we'll know soon. I think that if this doesn't get to the president's desk by mid, late fall, I would say the likelihood of something happening in this Congress is pretty slim.
Yeah.
We're obviously going into a presidential election year, and we'll have the entire House of Representatives, one-third of the Senate up.
Yeah.
That is an extraordinarily large, distracting event for policymakers.
Especially right now with the environment in Washington.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about your legislative agenda for this year?
Sure. Well, we're obviously being supportive of our physicians on the surprise medical billing issue. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing is that because ASC procedures are scheduled procedures, we are not sending surprise bills to anyone, which is a good thing. However, we are aware of the fact that we have contracted anesthesia services, we have pathology services that are frequently used in the surgery center, and those providers may or may not be in the same insurance network as the ASC. That's the way that we're involved in that issue, and what I would love to see is, rather than have to wait for a law or a regulation to mandate something on surgery centers, I think it would be a good thing for ASCs on behalf of their patients to do a better job of educating the patient about the potential for an out-of-network bill, even though they're coming to an in-network surgery center.
So, one of the things to look at probably is what New York did, which is a relatively simple system, even though everybody complains about it. It's just, notification. You provide the patient prior to surgery list of, the providers and who they're contracted with so that you have that information. If you haven't provided that information prior to that date of surgery, so at least that information's there.
Right. Whether actually the ASC is aware of it, but at least make the patient aware of the fact that there's a potential and recommend to the patient that they contact their insurance carrier
to determine
to make that determination. I think that simple step will be very helpful, and I think again, we want to do right by our patients, and that's a very simple way I think of helping them, because we all know how complicated healthcare is and healthcare financing is.
So tell me what's going on with the ASC Association.
Well, we're doing very well. We're obviously, have very pleased about what we've been able to accomplish for ASCs, with CMS on these past couple of payment rules. Every year, I think we're building greater support in Congress amongst both Democrats and Republicans for the things that we stand for. We'll be reintroducing our ASC bill in the next few days, which seeks to solidify some of the things that we've already accomplished, by regulation. And it's always good to get things locked into stone by having them be in law rather than subject to the whims of one administration to the next. We're obviously always looking to grow membership. There are still too many surgery centers out there that don't recognize the value of what we and their state ASC association are doing for them. When we are, so small in terms of numbers, in terms of, relative to the hospitals and to the insurance companies, in terms of our ability to try and get up to the hill and impact change and spend money to try and, elect people that support the things that we support. That said, if we were all marching in the same direction, all, working together, we can really get a lot done. And and so I would really hope that more surgery centers would understand that value and that the relatively small price of our membership really pays dividends in terms of things we're accomplishing, in terms of reducing regulatory burdens, increasing payments with Medicare and Medicaid, working with commercial payers to try and make sure that they understand the value of ASCs and are doing more within their networks to try and drive care to us because it saves the system money. So I think we've been very successful in terms of trying to create a better public image of surgery centers, making sure that the health media, that policymakers, that members of the public have a better understanding of what a surgery center is and the good things that we're doing to control healthcare costs without limiting quality of care.
Right. Yeah. And all the other benefits that come with, especially we've come off of two incredible education programs, because I have a vested interest in this since I'm on the education committee. But we really, ASCA 2019 and the winter seminars in January were just incredible.
Well, and John, you've been such a valuable addition to that with the speaking that you've done for us over the years. We're always looking to find the best people, the most accomplished experts in their field to come and talk about things that matter to the surgery center team, whether it's the administrator, the nurses, other staff. And we're actually looking to focus more on that. We want to try and find ways to kind of identify different education for different folks on the ASC team so they can get the education they need to succeed in their jobs and in their career.
Right. And I think we just opened up registration for ASCA winter seminars, right?
Correct. In New Orleans.
New Orleans.
It's going to be a real fun place to be in February.
We're having fighting within the company as to who's going. So I'm going. I won.
It's a long weekend. It's Martin Luther King weekend.
Oh, is it really? Right.
Yeah. It's every year we held it at the same week. So there's that little extra opportunity for many folks to stay over an extra day. We're putting together some great education for it. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we're trying to make sure that education is impactful, that it's going to help the folks who attend do better in their careers, provide better care in the surgery center, and help patients more.
Right. And then don't forget about ASCA 2020 coming up in Orlando in
May. So we're looking forward to that. We're already putting together, and finalized a great education agenda there. 3 days of really good education on a wide range of topics, whether they're financial or operational or clinical, that can, help surgery centers succeed.
Absolutely. So where do they go to join?
They go to ASCAssociation.org, and I've got a crack membership team loves to talk to potential members and explain the myriad benefits that we offer to surgery centers. Yeah. And because, again, that membership has to matter within the center. The things that we do have to help the physicians, the nurses, the team in the surgery center. And then also we have a mission to try and make sure that the whole ASC healthcare delivery model succeeds and thrives.
Right.
And I think that we have married together those twin goals in a way that really makes membership really important and valuable.
Right. And I hear we're seeing each other in Ohio
in
a couple
Ohio,
of weeks. And then I heard that you're coming to New York also again. So
I will be coming to New York again. Some great work going on in New York in terms of the establishment of a kind of a rebooted state association.
Thanks a lot, by the way, to the ASC Association. You really did help us out. I mean, that's not generally known out there, but we really, many of these state associations are struggling because they just don't have the resources. And ASC Association has been great. Allie, with your organization has been great helping us out. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Because, I always say that, belonging to and supporting just either your national association or your state association is like insuring one half of your car.
Right.
You really need to be protected all the way around. And the only way you can do that is to belong to both your, ASCA at the national level and your state association. And, we've been working very hard over the years, and particularly in the last few years, with actually the support of some of the large management companies to try and infuse some additional dollars into that state affairs effort to, one, help put out a particular fire if there's a significant legislative or regulatory challenge in a specific state, to have some resources to bring to bear to there that the state association may not be able to afford, as well as also to go into some states, like, for example, New York, and help them create a more robust state presence.
Right.
Now, there are some states out there that are too small, have too few surgery centers to actually have a full-fledged association, but they still should have some kind of alliance, some kind of way to unite, particularly when it comes to a legislative or regulatory challenge, because something bad that happens in a small state, say Wyoming or South Dakota, can have ramifications in larger states, because state lawmakers talk to each other, they look to see what other states are doing. So if a domino falls in one state, it can quickly go to another, which is why we have to always be kind of mindful of what's happening around us.
Thanks so much, Bill. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks very much. I'm sorry it took this long for me to get in front of the microphone, but hopefully it won't be my last.
That's absolutely true.
And that's it for the special episode from Ohio. We want to thank everybody in Ohio for inviting us. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And please tell your friends and colleagues about our podcast and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, All Rights Reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.